With digital assets, the ability to disrupt the finance industry, particularly, is going to be as impactful as the internet was into digitizing your world and the economy.
CEOs often feel stuck in the grind of scaling their business and feel like they're missing out on the best parts of life, like family, friends, or travel. On this podcast, CEOs come to take themselves and their companies to the next level. Let's dive into the Millionaire Mind with your host, Dallin Schultz.
Hey, welcome back to another Millionaire Mind episode where I have some of the most successful business owners sharing what motivates them to get out of bed every morning and how they elevate themselves and their companies to the next level. And today you're in for a treat. Our guest has been involved in startups for over 15 years and has gone through and experienced two successful acquisitions of his companies in the digital and tech space. So we're definitely going to get into a lot of this fascinating aspect, especially in the world of crypto. He has a wealth of knowledge and experience, and we're really excited to get into his journey. So without further ado, special welcome to our guest, Boz Menzelji. Boz, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for having me, Dallin. How are you?
Excellent. Excellent. So Boz and I connected, gosh, it was probably a couple months ago, and finally we're able to get on the show. And so Boz, why don't you share a little bit with our listener, just a little bit about who you are and what you do today?
Yeah, so I'm Boz Menzelji. What I do today, and that we'll talk about, I'm a founder of a digital asset firm called Four Moons. We sub-advise hedge funds on their crypto strategies, on how to optimize interest-bearing strategies on the digital assets. And we also run blockchain infrastructure. We sub-advise essentially crypto startups on their go-to-markets, fundraising strategies, et cetera, et cetera. And I personally also am part of a community that is onboarding large protocols and institutional capital into crypto. Most notably, we helped PayPal's digital asset initiative, their stablecoin, PYUSD, which we'll talk about later, onboard into this new world and establish a presence in this massive, massive market.
Wow, absolutely incredible. Did you think you'd be where you are, like 20 years ago, did you think you'd be where you are today?
7 years ago, I was a senior in high school. I was 17. There's no blockchain there. There's no Satoshi Nakamoto and his white paper on Bitcoin. So no, I did not think I would be where I am today. I've always had a passion for tech. I've always been tinkering around with tech. So I knew it was going to be in the tech field. Where and how that evolved? Absolutely not. But I guess looking back on it, you could always connect the dots and it always made sense leading up to this perspective. Because if you're curious, you kind of just let it lead you along your journey.
So let's take it back then, because you said all along you could see how the dots were kind of lining up to get you to where you are. So when would you say this entrepreneur journey really began for you?
So let's start at the very, very beginning. So I immigrated from Syria in a city called Latakia, which is basically a port town in the northwest part of the country. And my dad has always been an entrepreneur. So he's always had his own little restaurant business. And I've always been surrounded by him and his hardworking ethic that kind of instilled those values in me. But outside of that, with entrepreneurs and their risk-taking appetite, he made one of the largest risks and bets of all, which is immigrating to a new country. So taking that leap of faith, trusting in yourself and having the confidence to do though, or to do that, those values, I believe, were essentially like the genesis of where this like fire came to be. But once in the States, my middle school best friend at the time, his mom was part of IBM, and she was one of the earliest women at IBM starting in like the early 80s. So you can imagine the resilience of that woman. But she instilled with me the values and showed me around like IBM, what it does, servers, mainframes. So it really got me like, it's like the genesis and the values instilled by my dad, but also like the interest of tech and how it actually worked started with her. So you meld those two together, and that to me established a really strong foundation for curiosity of what's on the bleeding edge, what's coming, how product and technology gets introduced to the market, how it evolves, the life cycles around new technology. And you could apply those lessons, you know, whether it's like the printing press or crypto and everything in between, everything follows a natural cycle when it comes to new technology and new products coming into the market. So those are the two pillars of what spurred me to get into startups.
And what a great example from both these people. Your dad making that leap of faith, immigrating to a new country. And was you mentioned middle school. How old were you when you guys came over? Was it around that point?
No, I was much earlier. I was 8 years old when I came to the United States and we moved to Portland, Oregon. So as imagine one day you're literally living a life on the Mediterranean right across the street. And the next day you're in Portland, Oregon.
So 8 years old, you still probably have quite a bit of memories.
Quite a bit of
memories. Syria. Yeah. So what was one of the biggest adjustments that you, as an 8 year old, had to make during that transition?
Well, that city actually had a lot of exposure to Western culture. A lot of Europeans vacation in that part of the country. So there was really no culture shock because you saw different people speaking different languages. So it's very easy for me to get accustomed to and pick it up really fast. But also, you kind of take an age into consideration here. It's really easy for young people to adapt quickly. I think the biggest culture shock, though, is going to the quote-unquote beach of Oregon, aka the coastline. And again, coming from living a life on the Mediterranean, I had no concept of cold water, cold ocean water. So the first time going to the beach in Oregon, in the Cannon Beach specifically, and touching that water was probably the biggest culture shock. I remember I was like, why are we here? Let's go back.
This isn't the beach.
This isn't the beach. What is this?
So you mentioned when you connected with your friend in middle school, and his mom was in this working for IBM. Something about just that tech space just really resonated with you. And one thing I've picked up on is with most of the guests we've had on this podcast, whatever vehicle they've chosen for business, something just clicks, something just resonates with them. And they can't always necessarily put their finger on it right away, but they come to find out with time that it's a few features or a few aspects of that vehicle that really drew them in, even though they may not have known it at the time. So looking back, when you were introduced to this industry, this area, what was it that you feel like really drew you in to this tech space?
The possibilities. Like if you actually, it's just the possibilities, right? And if you, I'm also like, I pride myself in understanding and learning more about history than anything and the impact that technology has had on history itself. Like we can even start again with the printing press or the aqueducts or gunpowder and the trajectory and influence it had on mankind. So with technology specifically, technology could mean a variety of things. And given my background, like one of my earliest stops in my career is I worked at an agriculture tech manufacturing company. We were driving in the middle of nowhere America, rural, right? And the amount of technology and automation these farmers have had managing 10, 15, 20,000 acres using their iPad, leveraging infrared technology from satellites that gives them the soil content up to 6 inches in the ground. It just boggles my mind, like how much automation and tech has influenced our way of managing the world. So to me, like the earliest stages of like, what the heck is a mainframe? What the heck is a server? What the heck is the internet? How does the internet work? And studying the, I guess, like the go-to market of the internet from the Department of Defense in the 60s, these massive warehouse size computers over time and the power that it's had on compatibility and access to knowledge from the hands of your palm, it just really unlocked a lot of these questions like, what's next? What can we do? But like also theories on futurists from Google and Microsoft. And you see all these massive leaders and innovators in space always talk about what's next and what's the future. Nanotechnology, AI, machine learning, CRISPR technology, right? All of these things can make a drastic impact. So it's always good to just have a pulse on the market, even though it's not necessarily in your field, whether it's investing opportunities and whatnot, but it always just drives that curiosity.
And you brought up a really good point. Tech is pretty much ingrained into every aspect of our society. I love the example you brought up about the farmers. I lived in Eastern Arizona for a few years, bunch of cotton farmers out there. They throw their tractors on GPS, sit in the driver's seat, and the tractors basically drive themselves. And they grade the fields on a certain slope because they use irrigation out here. I grew up back east. I didn't even know what irrigation was. But they slope their fields slightly so that when they run water and they irrigate, the water will flow down. But all that is pre-programmed into these computers and this technology. It's insane.
You take that bucket, and then now you look at vertical farming, aquaponic farming, a hybrid of these things, regenerative farming. You want to talk about really sustainability? Like, if you care about sustainability, you talk to farmers. They are on the bleeding edge of technology. And to me, that was surprising, but it opened up like technology can exist in different formats. And it's really interesting to kind of like unlock specific aspects that you don't see today. You don't see how food gets to you. And if you study that, it's surprising what's actually happening, good and bad. But again, the point of all this is technology can be a force of good. And it's just a matter of time of trying to figure out, like, how can you participate in the growth of that to capture the efficiencies? And in my case, the value.
100%. So let's fast forward a little bit. And I mean, you established an early vision and picture for our listener of why you went down this path. So let's fast forward a little bit and share with our listeners a little bit about your first venture into a tech startup. And what were some of the things that you really learned from that?
Oh, okay. Yeah. So I graduated University of Oregon with a degree in finance in 2008. So if people can remember, big recession, not great to have a finance degree. And I think at the time, I mean, there were literally no jobs. I was applying left and right, couldn't find really anything until I was looking for a big job, corporate. I wanted like a little office, a little cubicle. That to me was, again, amazing because I've always had this romance about working for IBM. I grew up with one of the most influential person in my life, an IBM person. But I sort of like, okay, you know, I'm thinking too big. What about small companies? And I came across a web gaming startup in Portland, Oregon, that specialized in fantasy football. So, but the literal term, you build a player, you equip a player, you train the player, and then you put them through their game simulation engine. And at the time, I can't recall, but I think it was like 400,000 or 500,000 active players globally. And wow. This is before like Facebook games and all that. We had a social game on forums and a massive audience. One, I love the flexibility and nimbleness of a startup. There's no red tape. If you have an initiative, you go do it. If you're motivated to do something, you go do it. You want to talk to customers? There they are. It is immensely flexible with how fast you want to move and what you can do. And the experiments that the founders will allow you to conduct if you have a strong thesis that would add value. And not only that, you can measure the impact that you can have, whether it's on culture, whether it's on the customer experience, or whether it's value generated. And at the time, all my friends were driving to offices. I was working remote and I was making my own schedule and working from coffee shops, traveling. And again, it's like that lifestyle and balance of you want to generate value, but you want to be flexible. There's room for that. And to me, that was kind of like the light bulb moment of, oh my gosh, startups are where I belong.
Give us the years that this started.
That was right after college. So April of 2009 is...
So you were working remote before it was cool to work remote. Yeah. Post-pandemic, right? You pioneered the remote work.
Yeah, we had the Verizon hotspots that looked like the size of like a iPad. It was Max just to connect online, and it was fun.
That's very rare and unique at that point, because I mean, it wasn't till obviously 2020 that I feel like people started realizing how efficient they could be working remotely. We talk a lot about the grind and the hustle for startups, but one thing that you mentioned that I think is really neat is just the flexibility of a startup as well. I talked to a good friend of mine. He was a CFO for a hospital. Mm-hmm. A lot of red tape. And if you want a decision, you got to run it up the ladder. There's like five people. It takes forever. They move very, very slowly. He just started working with another company, not a startup, but also I want to consider corporate. And he works in an office. The owners are right there. If they want to make a decision, they chat about it for a little bit, boom, done. And they move on to the next thing. So the ability to keep a good pulse on that and to really hustle and grind, I think, is often overlooked with startups because you don't have all that red tape. And I think that's why it draws a lot of people like you and I and the other people on our show into those types of situations, because it allows our minds and our creativity to come out, and then we can measure through the business.
I think small teams have the flexibility to move fast, right? That is not to say that large organizations cannot also not move fast. I guess it really depends on the culture of those organizations. An example of this is like large organizations like a hospital, like a very well-oiled machine, they move slow and there's a lot of politics and red tape, and they're big. They can afford to move slow, even though it's inefficient. However, let's take a look at the case study of Tesla. Tesla has what, 15,000, 20,000 employees? You go there, you go to any team, whether it's product, whether it's engineering, they operate like a startup. They operate with speed. They operate with efficiency. Look at SpaceX. I toured SpaceX a few years ago. Large organization. They're building rockets. They are responsible for human safety going to space. They operate with speed, with efficiencies, and it shows. People are extremely passionate about there because they're mission-driven. So startup mentality, like you can have startup culture in a large organization, or you can be in a startup in a very, very small and nimble organization. Nimbleness isn't tied to like the team size philosophically. It's just a matter of what kind of leader are you to actually instill those values early on so that the culture permeates the size of your organization as you grow. Large, mid, small. I think even if I was to join a large organization, I would not join unless that startup culture and startup drive and being excited about whatever your mission is there.
You mentioned in that explanation, mission driven. And I think that comes naturally with a lot of startups because they have that passion, they have that why, and that doesn't only need to pertain to startups. And I think you brought up a good example with Tesla, how they are mission driven, and the individual teams, you got the buy-in from the leaders, the employees, and you have that passion and that drive that you often find a lot in these startups. So I think that's critical right there, just being mission driven. So listen, if you're a business owner, listen to this episode right now, and you feel like you're lacking in some of that drive, maybe take a step back, evaluate, figure out what changes or pivots you might need to make to get a little bit more of that buy-in.
Hey guys, my name's Nate Hare. I'm the executive director at Directed IRA. Directed IRA is a company that exists to provide a solution for people that want to invest their retirement accounts, be it IRAs or old 401ks, into things like real estate or things outside of the stock market. If you want to invest your IRA or old 401k into investments like real estate, apartments, syndications, or the great investments that Rev Equity has to provide, make sure that you reach out to us. You can find our information on investwithrev.com or our website, www.directedira.com. Open a self-directed IRA and invest in alternatives today.
Awesome, Boz. Well, man, we're cruising through time here, and I want to give you an opportunity to chat a little bit about more of what you're doing today, especially in the crypto space. So share with our listeners how you made that pivot, that transition into Four Moons and what you're doing with that currently.
Yeah. So like I mentioned, I'm a student of history. And if you follow how the internet evolved, particularly like from 1992 to mid-2000s, there's a lot of activity, a lot of innovation, a lot of experiments. With digital assets, the ability to disrupt the finance industry, particularly, is going to be as impactful as the internet was into digitizing your world and the economy. And I saw the same lessons, the same funding rates today. If you actually look at the growth of the internet in terms of users, people online, from 92 to, let's just say 2000, 2001, heck, even 2002. And you overlay that with the start of Bitcoin and then people using crypto, you will find a 95% correlation.
Wow.
It is growing at the speed of the internet. And remember, like early internet days, really hard to use. Nobody understood what an email was. There's like a famous Today Show episode with those guys saying like, what is an at sign? What is an email? Those questions were there. People just don't remember. Heck, you remember, for those listeners who are old enough, like, how did you get online? You got a modem, you got an AOL CD-ROM with like 5,000 hours from, you had to install and you had to hear the screeching noise that, you know.
the dial-up noise.
It was hard. It was hard. It was confusing. Nobody understood it. But it eventually got there. Why? Because the internet was faster, better, cheaper way of communicating, generating commerce and revenues, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. On the crypto side of things, particularly my field, there's a variety of different fields within crypto, just like there's a variety of different websites on the internet. Within the decentralized finance space, all that really means is, forget the terminology, but all that really means is that when you go to a bank and you want a product or service, they have a list of products and services. Lending for cars, car loans, mortgage loans, business loans, and a variety of other things. They also have financial products for investments and the myriad of other things, right? And there's a person there, there's a banker that will tell you, solve the problem that you're looking for. And the decentralized finance space, all it is that it mirrors those products and services into an application, like a website. What that really means is that it's better, faster, cheaper because it functions the same way as products and services operate in a bank. But it's done so without all the overhead and the brick and mortar and the people of a bank because it's automated. And to me, that's where it clicked. So those efficiencies, because it's an application as opposed to a huge bank and all the inefficiencies of a bank, are passed on to you. So whether it's a lending thing, whether it's interest generating thing, whether it's deploying working capital in the space, operates at a much more efficient level than financial products operate today. So when you think about capital markets, it's a $100 trillion market globally. That's what capital markets are, from insurance to loans to a variety of different things. Whether it's settlement, currency, forex, all those things, there's now an application for it that transacts more efficiently, cheaper, and settles instantaneously. Something that banks cannot simply compete with because that infrastructure is simply outdated. A good analogy would be like, yes, you can use the steam engine to travel from point A to point B, or you can use a hypersonic jet. If you had the option, which one would you rather do? One is slow, expensive, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. One can get you there. It solves it. There's no added inefficiencies there. And again, regardless of how you feel about crypto in general, opinions don't matter. Like, the market's the ultimate judge. Again, if you go back to, is it better, faster, cheaper, whether it's a product, service, or a new technology, the market's going to find the most least path of resistance for adoption. And I feel that crypto, in a variety of different ways, is creating those things. It's upgrading the layer and the infrastructure of the internet to allow people like you and me to take advantage of that. So that's the role I find myself today, is understanding how do you create this value for people who want to participate in crypto, and not just like buy Bitcoin. Anybody can buy Bitcoin, but how do you make Bitcoin work for you, right? How does Bitcoin generate interest? How does the other platform generate? Where is the interest coming from? And those are the things that like keep me very excited about like the possibilities. And just to give you one final perspective, is Bitcoin, digital assets in general, about 12, 13 years ago, started with zero. Today, it's over $2 trillion in market cap. The decentralized finance space, again, let the market judge on what works and what doesn't. Not me, not the opinions. That doesn't matter. Market. Mm-hmm. The decentralized finance space, what I just talked about, that is a little over 3 years old. This financial applications that are mirroring the products and services that banks have. 3 years ago, it started. As of today, it's the market cap. So the total addressable market today is about $140 billion. As of yesterday, BlackRock, as a starter, submitted $100 million into the space. It's on the blockchain. You can see their address, essentially their account. And that is to start. You have the largest asset manager in the world participating in this new economy. And it's just only a matter of time before people begin accelerating the adoption rate.
There's something to say about early adopters in history, and especially in the tech space. What advice, what suggestions could you give to those that are kind of sitting on the fence, waiting to see what happens with all this? Like, what thoughts could you share with them?
If you knew what you know today about the internet, and it was 1994, what would you do? And I would flip it back on them. Well, the easiest answer is like, oh man, if I knew Google and PayPal and Amazon, and I could invest in all these stocks and all these different things, I could have captured the value as an early adopter from the effort that they generated along the way. It's very rare that a new technology like the internet and the applications on the internet, aka the websites in that case, makes a dent and literally shifts our way of working and engaging for commerce. Digital assets is that moment for the internet. It's literally upgrading the fabric of the internet to allow us to exchange value and assets in a much more efficient way. That's long been held very closely by the banks. And if you want to participate in this world, there's an avenue to do so. And on a long-term horizon, take a look at like what's happening. Don't look at the naysayers. Even the internet, if you Google Newsweek 1995, internet will fail. There's a Newsweek article that will tell you why the internet is a fad, why it's a tulip festival thing. Will we actually trust the internet to log online and access our banks? Most likely not. Will we upload photos for strangers? Likely not. The internet will fail, blah, 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 blah. It's easy to find naysayers. That to me is noise. If you look at the people that are actually having formal opinions and constructive opinions about what it could lead to, this is the internet of possibilities. Focus on that content and then just educate yourself on like what it could mean. Well, what is Bitcoin? Why is Bitcoin a thing? Who's using Bitcoin? Then you kind of go into the rabbit hole like, oh my gosh, we're printing money. We printed $2 trillion out of thin air. There's inflation. Where's inflation? What does that mean for me and my family? And that's when dots begin clicking like a Lego piece and constructing a worldview of why this matters and why this piece of technology is literally critical for the economy of the future.
Start asking questions. And I think a lot of people, rather than asking questions and seeking for answers, they just want to look to a quick answer and base their opinion off somebody else's opinion.
You know, a lot of people are like, hey, Dallin, I know you're in real estate. That's like me asking, what do I need to invest in? And you're like, well, is there storage? Is there rentals? Is it commercial? Yes,
exactly.
Is it industrial? Is it link? You don't ask, or what stock do I invest in? Who knows? You have to think and ask thoughtful questions just to educate yourself. And there's a lot of YouTube content out there for people that don't want to read. I personally am a YouTube person. And there's a lot of avenues to educate yourself on what to even ask.
Awesome. Well, Boz, this has been incredible, man. Appreciate you sharing your journey and your thoughts around this digital and this tech space, especially around crypto. And you help people in this space, right? That's what you currently do with Four Moons.
Yeah, I like my passion at the end of the day now. And just like the people that have helped me along the way, is I like to educate people on crypto if they have questions. But yeah, with Four Moons, at this stage, when you hit a specific level, you kind of send the elevator back down. So I help a lot of founders on their journey. I educate family offices and high net worth individuals on what I think about it. But I also just love talking about crypto in general. So yeah, I love educating.
Awesome. Well, as we wrap this up, there's four questions we like to ask every guest at the end of every episode. And the first one being is, what is one absolute book recommendation for those looking to scale and further develop their millionaire mind?
One of the books that has been absolutely influential for me, again, when you think about startups and new initiatives, and it doesn't matter where you are in your cycle, it's The Lean Startup by Eric Ries. Helps you experiment fast and then adopt fast iteration cycles around an idea. A lot of people want to build huge things to verify something. There is always that minimum viable thing that you can do to validate a thesis or get a signal to continue progressing. So Lean Startup, I highly recommend it.
Awesome. And what has been one of your favorite quotes that you've embodied and lived by?
My favorite athlete of all time is Muhammad Ali, and as impossible as nothing. Just given humble beginnings, third world country, and right now it's like uncomfortable winnings just because of that journey. If you really set out your mind, like we came to this country with nothing and here I am in North Scottsdale, I think there is a tremendous opportunity if you really commit your mind and surround yourself with the right community to achieve those dreams. So that's
100%.
I have that in my office.
Love it. Couldn't agree more. Boz, if there was one thing you could share with fellow business owners that are beginning or simply trying to get to that next level, what would it be?
Community. Find your tribe. I cannot stress the importance of finding a mentor or somebody in your community. If you're in real estate, go to real estate meetups. Find the investors, because when you find somebody who's done it, been there, done that, they took years to know what they know. And if they can give you that golden nugget, you just had 10 years of wisdom shared with you in 10 seconds, right? And if you want to participate in a new industry or break into it, find the meetups, go to Eventbrite, go to meetup.com, whatever it is, find your community and participate and exchange ideas and ask questions. Don't be afraid to ask questions, but definitely get a community around you.
And what I found is that these mentors or these people that are where I want to be are extremely generous with their time.
Oh, yeah. Don't be shy.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, Boz, if people want to connect more with you and learn more about what you're doing, where can they find out more information?
Yes, there are two sites. The first is 4moons, the word four and then moons.xyz. All my contact information will be there. That is the 4moons advisory. And if people want to learn about what we do for the fund, it's kingsleycapital.com/fund-invest.
So if you're listening to this and you want more information about cryptos, how to get started, or even looking for a vehicle to potentially invest in, we don't advise on the show by any means, but if you have questions, reach out to Boz. Reach out to Boz and his team, because not only does he have the information, the education that he'll help share with you, but they also have a vehicle to help you get started if that's something you're interested in. So if you have questions, reach out to him, folks. Well, Boz, this has been incredible. Thank you so much for your time, sharing your journey. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Appreciate the opportunity, Dallin.
And to our listener, remember, you can't have a $1 million dream with a minimum wage work ethic. So go out there and earn your win for today, and we'll catch you on the next episode.
Hope you got value from this episode of The Millionaire Mind, a journey into the mindset of successful business owners. If you want to get results, you've got to take the right steps to get there. Dallin hosts a free weekly educational webinar focused on teaching you how to start investing in apartments so you too can experience the benefits of real estate ownership without doing any of the heavy lifting. There you can gain insights, connect with others like you, and ask Dallin all your burning questions about how you can start owning apartments today. Go to themillionairemind.us. That link is in the show notes.